Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. In just about every country, every language, there's a particular expression people use when they're making a toast. Salute, a votre santé, prost, skål. Whatever the words, the meaning is the same. We are drinking to your health. We could drink to many things, offer a toast in many different ways, and indeed for special occasions, such as weddings, we do. But the overriding universal sentiment expressed in an ordinary toast is a wish for good health, because it's so important. Let's face it, we often take our health for granted. We just expect to go through life in a normal, average kind of way, with all of our moving parts working in sync. Even though we know, of course, that not everyone is so fortunate. In a small town in West Virginia, among the mountains and the hollers, lives a 12-year-old girl named Emily. She and her parents can't take her health for granted. Emily has cerebral palsy. She has impaired hearing, limited speech, and limited mobility. 25 years ago, she would have had a much more difficult time of it. But these days, with breakthroughs in research and education, she is tapping her potential. Today's program, produced by Jean Snediger, is called Educating Emily.
In a little country church up a green West Virginia hollow, Emily is celebrating her 12th birthday along with her parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and assorted cousins. We're just north of Elkins, a small town in the Allegheny Mountains, about 200 miles west of Washington, D.C.
Hey, Em, come here. Come here for a minute.
Further up the hollow, she lives in a mobile home with her mother, Cindy, who works in a local bank.
Do you want to open up your presents now, or do you want to blow out the candles first? What do you want to do? Open now? Okay, you can do that. Go ahead. You can open them up. Mommy will get your cake ready, okay? Okay.
We're trying to light these candles for Emily's birthday cake that looks like a basketball court. And she'll blow them out as soon as Daddy gets them lit. I hope she can blow them out easier than I can get them lit.
Emily's father, Huey, is an administrator in a state prison about 20 miles away. 6 years ago, Cindy and Huey were divorced. But where Emily's concerned, they make every effort to remain united, staying in touch almost daily. Raising Emily has been a challenge almost from the day Cindy got pregnant. For months, she was on bed rest and then had a long and difficult labor.
Whenever we had Emily, I can remember the doctor coming in the door and looking, and he goes, "Oh my God, it's too late for a C-section. We got to get that baby out of there right now. We're losing that baby." By the time we got the baby out, she had a cord around her neck. The cord was small, and he said every time he'd have a contraction, that cord would wrap around like a thread. You know, the thinner the cord, the more it's going to pull tight against that throat.
That moment, we didn't really know of anything that was going on with her. We was just glad she was born and alive and breathing. For the next day or so, the doctors detected there was something wrong, and when we were broke the news that Emily had cerebral palsy, of course, there was a ton of things that was running through our heads. Was she going to be able to walk? Was she going to be able to talk? Was she going to be able to go to school? Believe it or not, one of the first things I thought of was she ever going to be able to drive a car? You name it, it went through my head. I didn't know. It was a hard hit. It was a hard hit.
Then after she was born, she had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is like, it's not a hemorrhage in the brain, but right on the outside of the brain. She had that. She had a heart murmur. She had strep B in her scalp. She had sleep apnea. She had seizures too. So she was in la-la land there for a long time. So then, you know, at that time when I was watching her, I was thinking, oh, this poor child's not going to be able to do anything.
Even at 3, expectations for Emily were pretty dismal. She couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, and she had serious hearing difficulties. She was able to learn a few words in sign language, but because of her cerebral palsy, it was often hard to tell what she was saying. When she entered Randolph County's preschool for children with special needs, Emily was assessed by the head of special education, Joe Super.
I can remember looking at her, and forgive me, but I didn't think that the prognosis was very good. I didn't think she'd ever be able to walk on her own, and I seriously questioned cognitively what she would be able to do. I guess if you wanted to start at a starting point on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say Emily, at that time, was probably a one or a two.
Certainly during her first year at preschool, no one expected she would ever achieve much academically or be able to communicate beyond simple messages. But the following summer, speech therapist Bobby Tromboli began to visit Emily at home. Observing her with her mother, Bobby suspected Emily might be more capable than the professionals thought.
She was able to tell her mother things that when her mother wasn't even present in events, she could go home and tell her mother through gesture and imitation, things that her mother would have never known because she hadn't seen it, but Emily could communicate. That was my first big indicator that Emily's inner language skills or her receptive language skills were much higher than her expressive, and that led me to believe that she probably was a good candidate for some kind of device that we could program that could actually speak for her.
Emily's first portable talker had three or four choices. She could press a large button on a little radio-like device, and a computerized voice would say, yes, or no, or I want to go to the bathroom. It began to open up Emily's world. It gave her a voice to express her desires and show her stuff. At six, she even started to walk. Today, Emily is in a class of hearing-impaired students at Midland Elementary School in Elkins.
Good, Emily.
Computers that speak to her and for her are an everyday part of her education. Rather than three or four choices, now she can say thousands of different things using the computer.
Okay, Emily, I want your first word that you type. I would like you to type red, one of your spelling words.
Red.
When teacher Pam Roberts says a word, Emily types it on a standard keyboard, then runs her right index finger across the word on the screen, and the computer says it.
Dickum.
Every week, she's tested on five spelling words.
Third word is sure. Raise your hand if you're sure.
It's a toughie, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. Tough word, yeah.
Between the computers for her lessons and ones that talk for her, Emily uses more sophisticated technology than any other child in the county.
Okay, Emily, can you go to the spelling page, please?
I can spell my spelling words.
And spell Emily.
Emily.
Good job. Good job.
For most lessons, Emily has a Pegasus Lite Tough Talker, which is programmed by her longtime teacher, Donna Simmons. Half the size of a laptop, it's got nearly 300 pages of stories and lessons. In the early days, Donna didn't think Emily would be able to read in the conventional way. She programmed every lesson using only pictures and symbols. Sometimes it took 90 minutes.
The symbols are basically pictures of whatever it is. If it's a cat, it's a picture of a cat. Now, for words like the and is, they have certain symbols. The is like a sideways triangle. Is an equal mark. And Emily just had to learn those on her own.
But one day, something finally clicked. As Emily watched Donna program a story from a book, she was able to associate the words on the page with symbols and pictures she already knew.
I was doing noun, verb, adjective, second noun in the same order that it was reading. I knew that Emily was actually reading because she would look at the book and then find the symbol on her computer. So once she realized that C-A-T was a word and it went with that particular picture, then she just took right off.
Even with Emily's ability to read, preparing her lessons continues to be a very time-consuming process.
When we introduce new vocabulary to Emily, she is shown a symbol and the word. And
so this is a person who looks a bit stubborn. It's an egg-shaped face with a stubborn look.
Right.
And then the word stubborn.
Yes. So Emily, when she learns to read, she not only has to learn the word, but she also has to learn the symbol. It's very complicated what she has to do. We use a symbol or sign for every vocabulary word that she learns.
The first time that I seen Emily read, my heart just shattered. I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, this kid is really going to be a lot better off than what I ever dreamed she would be. And it was a pretty special day. Mrs. Simmons, Donna Simmons, explained to me what was going on, and so I couldn't resist but to walk over and see exactly what she was doing. And Emily was reading. She was reading off the computer.
It's just amazing to me that a child or anyone can take this piece of equipment and go anywhere they want to go. They can type to you, they can, whatever's programmed on there, they can get there, and you can program anything imaginable.
Such sophistication comes at a price. Emily's current Tough Talker was paid for by a state technology grant, but its predecessor, just as expensive, was far more difficult to come by. Back then, no one was sure a speech computer would help Emily, so insurance wouldn't pay. Medicaid wouldn't pay. The state education board wouldn't pay. Huey and Cindy certainly couldn't afford it.
Whenever we first seen it, I thought maybe it might be $800 or $1,000, something like that. And then whenever they started telling us how much it cost, and it was way up past $10,000. We had no idea how we were going to get this money. And basically what we did was we just started telling friends about this thing that we had to get, and they pitched in, and we had fundraisers anywhere from having hot dog sales to even a friend of mine donated a building to have a raffle to buy this thing, and we pulled it off. We probably raised money for approximately 8 or 9 months to a year, something like that. And we came up with the money and we bought it. And it's helped her ever since.
In math and science and reading and social studies, Emily can do lessons on her own or with a teacher. Through her speech computer, she's decided to tell Don and me some things she's learned about West Virginia.
The state flower is a rhododendron.
What's the state animal?
The state animal is a black bear.
Okay, Emily, what's the state fish?
Didn't know West Virginia had a state fish.
They do, and Emily knows what it is. Emily, can you tell her what the state fish is?
The state fish is called the brook trout.
In case you didn't get that, it's the brook trout. Even though the computer is sometimes difficult to understand, the repetition reinforces Emily's learning.
So, Emily, when you see the screen, you read the words, and then you hear the words, and then it helps you to remember a lot more?
Yeah.
Do you like hearing as well as seeing what you're reading?
Yeah.
Emily, let's try something else.
So we're going to go into this program called IntelliTalk.
Yes, it's called IntelliTalk 2. I went to Kentucky and trained on how to use this. I was there 2 weeks. I needed to find something that I could get some oral language out of Emily, and I was really stumped on what I could do to try to teach that to her. And through this program, you can put words in order. She can answer questions by using complete sentences, but they have to be in word banks. Okay, Emily, here are some words, and you can see they're in word banks. And I put the nouns and pronouns in one, all the connecting words. The verbs are up here. The places are here. So now she'll pick words and make sentences just based on...
Ate.
We ate...
Candy. Soon.
We ate candy soon. Do you like candy? Emily, do you want to talk about the Indians, or about Christopher Columbus, or about the Earth? Which one do you want to do? Can you tell me that instead of showing me with your hands? Can you tell me which one? About the Indians. This is an actual test that she'll take.
One. Do Amazon Indians hunt with guns?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you find the answer, Emily?
Yes.
Luckily, Randolph County has enabled me or let me go to several things through the grants that I've written or that has been made available to them. I do have a lot of technology in this room, but I've also done a lot of studying on what to use and what not to use.
Or, do Indians like strangers?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice to see you today.
Okay, you lead the way.
Every Friday, Emily has an hour of occupational therapy.
Okay, hang on a sec, Emily.
My name's Christine Dawson. I'm an occupational therapy assistant, and I have been working with Emily, I guess, for the past 2 to 3 years on a variety of skills, from using her assistive technology to feeding adaptations to trunk control, finger skills. I very much enjoy her.
Now, what's this Emily's got wrapped around her neck here?
This is a very compact assistive technology device. And this is new to her this year.
Made by Casio.
Yes, we're in the process of learning how to use this. Would you like to say a greeting today?
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Hello, my name is Emily.
Thank you. My name's Jean.
This is programmable by her teachers and her mother. So sometimes she comes in with a story about her weekend, and she can approach different people in the school. When she went to Disneyland, she had a few buttons on Disneyland, and she was telling us how her trip went, which is great. So she can share her experiences. The one she had in the past had less options, and they were larger buttons. So we're in the process of learning how to use this one. This one's slightly more complicated because there are a lot more choices. I want you to tell me if you like or if you don't like something, okay? What do you think of chocolate pudding?
It tastes delicious.
It's very important for Emily to be able to communicate in the community. And I believe that she's able to work on these smaller buttons since we've been working on her finger skills. But now it's just a matter of purposefully using her devices instead of just doing it to hear, so she can express herself in the community with less help. We want her to be as independent as possible one day.
See you later, alligator.
The easiest technology to implement. That's usually what people are looking for. What's the easiest? What's the least expensive? And that would be for exactly for kids like Emily, where we just want her to press a button and have the computer do things in response to her pressing the button. So we take a button. Here's a big, round, red one, about 5 inches.
In his warehouse in Laguna Niguel, California, assistive technology pioneer R.J. Cooper is showing me some of the devices and software he's designed for children with special needs.
This is a device that has changed the way in which we work with these buttons. This is called a magic arm. This is a way of positioning things, buttons, joysticks, trackballs, different types of things, so that the user can get at them. Now, before this device,
over the last 22 years, RJ has helped thousands of children in the U.S. and internationally do things people thought they could never do. Using big buttons, giant keyboards, and adjustable arms, children operate toys, cars, and computers. Over the years, he's seen patterns in how technology helps special needs children.
Out of the kids that I see, the learners, we'll call them, about 50% of them are walking, and they're talking, and they're what we might be considered mild to moderate. They have problems with writing, reading, arithmetic, social skills, but they're moving around the world, and they're doing things, and their prognosis in the world would be maybe a sheltered workshop or a group home. For that 50%, technology is a learning tool. And that means that sometimes they learn better when a computer, an objective computer, is instructing them and monitoring them rather than a subjective person who they can get angry with when they fail. Plus, it's individualized and it goes at their pace. About 10% of the learners that I run across would fall into the cerebral palsy category, of which they're high functioning, meaning they're close to target age, but their body is very involved and they need some type of computer access in order to do those things that you and I do. This most likely would cover Emily's area. The other 40% are what I call the catch-all category. A lot of these learners are undiagnosed. Many have cerebral palsy, but are cognitively functioning at a reduced age. There was a famous researcher in the 50s and 60s named Piaget from France, and he hypothesize that if you do not have physical hands-on experience in the world, you will have a cognitive, a thinking delay.
Which sort of children benefit most from technology?
The kids that benefit most from technology are definitely kids like Emily, because it's an instant change in their lives. People get the impression that computers are easy because we see TV and it says, book your travel on wherever with one click. Well, if you've ever tried to book your travel with one click, you come away very disappointed. 100 clicks and 2 hours later, you might have plane reservations. Computers are not easy. It's just a ruse by the computer companies to sell us computers. By the same token, teachers and parents who buy the computers for their kids, like Emily, and they think that it's going to be an instant change in their lives, are always disappointed in the learning curve of just getting things going and maintaining them. Computers, the value of them to kids like Emily, is not that they're easy and not that they make their life easier. It's that they allow Emily to do things that she couldn't do before.
Though RJ helps all types of special needs children, he specializes in helping those with severe or profound disabilities, both mentally and physically. He's developed cause and effect software to discover whether a child is in there, as he calls it, using cartoon characters like Switchman.
Switchman has just run into the monitor. We're pretending he's inside of the computer, and he just ran into the inside of the computer.
Hello.
And this is just cause and effect, where we want them to hit a button to make stuff happen.
Hit the button.
So the first thing that happens is we blank out the screen, and we hear somebody prompt us to do it.
Hello, where are you?
And the second thing that happens is Switchman will appear, and he knocks on the inside of the monitor to ask where we are so we can get back to work.
Let's do it.
And when the child responds to Switchman, others know an aware person is inside.
Emily, what would you like to drink?
Pop. Where is Pop?
I'd like a Diet Coke.
You like Diet Coke? Mm-hmm. You do? Okay.
Back at Midland School, Donna Simmons and Emily are having a simple conversation, but one that took many years of hard work on everyone's part. Nearly every day, to try to improve her real voice, Emily sees speech therapist Lori DiBacco.
Hey, Emily, do you remember doing our ahs? Say it as loud and as long as you can. This is a program that we use to help Emily improve her verbal speech as much as we're able to. It's called LSVT, and it's a program that focuses on the student's phonation, or how loud the sounds are, and hoping that if we can really work on that, things like articulation and the clarity of speech will follow from there. I'm going to say it, then you're going to say it. That was awesome, Emily. To make it practical, we go to successively more difficult tasks, and what we're going to practice now are some phrases that Emily would use every day anyway. Ready, Emily? How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
Awesome. High five.
High five.
Thank you.
Okay.
Emily, let's go. Are you ready to go to physical therapy? Huh? You ready to go with Daddy?
We'll see you tomorrow.
Let's get your coat.
I will be here. Get your hearing aids.
Indeed, Emily's work doesn't end at school. She's off to see her physical therapist, Bob Baird.
Emily really likes physical therapy. It's actually fun for her, and whenever we go in here, you'll see what I mean.
All right, Emily, we're going to show her how to play soccer.
Yeah.
This is the competitive Emily coming out.
We're in basically the main hallways of your offices,
yes.
Of your physical therapy
offices.
We're on
the outside. We utilize this hallway so she can better control the ball where it's going to go, and we also score a goal if it goes into our door.
Into one of your therapy rooms, I see here.
That makes the score. You will see excitement now. Very good. All right, Emily. Very good. Tell Dad to pass it to you. You got to get it in there. All right, back that way. And you see, Emily runs much, much better than she used to. She's much more controlled.
Goal! Well done, Emily!
All right! Very good.
Yes.
High fives for everybody. All right, one more time. That's not kicking a moving ball is it's eye-foot coordination, which is very, very difficult. She's just learning to do this more every week.
Emily will stay on an extra year at elementary school before going to middle school. By law, the school district must educate Emily until she's 21. But that's up in the air. Emily may not get teachers like Donna in middle school or high school. She may not be able to take advanced science like chemistry. And she may never learn a foreign language. No one can say what educating Emily will mean over the next 9 years, nor indeed what her life as an adult will be.
We want Emily to be as self-sufficient and enabled as possible. Now, what that means down the road, I really can't tell you. And I'm not saying that college wouldn't be appropriate for her either, but it would have to be a real special school that would be able to address and meet her needs.
One thing that I do know that Emily's going to be able to do as an adult, she will be able to pick up a newspaper and read it. And she'll be able to know what's going on around her by being able to pick up a newspaper and read it.
If she could just be independent, because I worry, any mom's going to worry. I just worry about after I'm gone. So that's my biggest dream for her. I just want her to be able to take care of herself.
Emily, what would you like to do when you grow up?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
Okay, come here. You be good, girl, and you wear your helmet whenever you ride your four-wheeler, okay?
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Happy birthday.
Okay.
I love you.
Educating Emily was produced by Gene Snediger. The show was mixed by Jared Weisbrot. This program originally aired as part of our series on technology and education, produced with support from the U.S. Department of Education. We've done quite a few shows through the years in that series, and you can hear them all anytime you want on our website, soundprint.org. You'll also find links to related websites and books posted there. The address again is soundprint.org. Next time on Soundprint, Ghanaians want to leave their country and come back wealthy.
That's in houses.
It's in housing, it's in cars, it's in clothing, it's in accessories, especially these mobile phones. You see them bringing all sorts of types of mobile phones, the new ones and everything.
The grass is greener next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee. Just call 1-888-38-TAPES to order your favorite episodes. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. We want your comments. We need your comments. We love your comments. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. And be sure to mention your local station. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.